open.
We're going to go in reverse order here today and do a work session on 523 and then move to a public hearing on the Senate Bill 595 and then 393. Senator Johnson is here, and she's sometimes fond of this phrase of shooting the dog in front of the owner. And we're going to do just the opposite of that because she's here on Senate Bill 523. So, Senator Benz, if you would be so kind to make a motion.
Don't we have an amendment?
Just dash one.
So, Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill. What's the number?
Hold on one second. Dash ones only?
Yes.
And
can we hear what it is?
So the dash one replaces, there's a blank in the bill for the amount.
That's right.
$50,000.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us what the amendment is then?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, so as a reminder, this is the public posting of tax debt bill, Senate Bill 523. The dash one amendment changes the threshold for the public delinquency amount from a blank placeholder to an amount of $50,000 required to be delinquent. And we do have fiscal impact statements, which was minimal. The revenue impact statement, it looks like it would generate about $2 million a biennium. And that's kind of the update.
Okay, if there are no other questions on that, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 523.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sure I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 523.
Senator Benz moves the dash ones to Senate Bill 523. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash ones are amended into 523.
I move Senate Bill 523 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Senator Benz moves Senate Bill 523 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist?
Yes.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Brax?
Yes.
Chair Haas?
Haas votes aye. Senate Bill 523 as amended goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Senator Johnson will be the carrier. I'll close my work session and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 595. Mazen Malek is our economist on that bill. We have a long list of people here to be heard on that. But we'll start with you.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 595 has to do with the transient lodging tax on the local level. And just a background of what the bill does. In the year 2003, or the session 2003, the House Bill 2267 created the transient lodging tax. And with it, created the Oregon Tourism Commission as an agency for the promotion of tourism in Oregon. And this legislative action also created the 1% transient lodging tax on the state level and dedicated that to having the tourism promotion. It went through definitions of what is subject and what is not for the tax. And also with that, there came the corollary of the tax at that time, which is the restriction of any new taxes from the local transient lodging. So the local governments would not have a way of increasing the taxes without those new taxes post-2003 be dedicated in certain ways, which is 70% going to the tourism promotion, and then the 30% would be a general fund type of way of doing things on the local level. Now, that 70% has been in existence since then, and to my knowledge, there has not been any new local taxes enacted since that time. This bill, what it does is it primarily changes the 70% threshold for expenditures on tourism, and puts it at 40%, and uses that 30% that is left out of that into the purpose of being used for affordable workforce housing. I also put in, so that's what the bill does, and I put in your background material about the different permutations and changes within the transient lodging tax, including our famous 2016 last minute bill that was coming out of this committee in the last second of the last minute of the last day of the session.
Thanks for bringing up that.
You know, it was my pleasure, Mr. Chief.
Okay, and Senator Johnson is still here. Let's go to Commissioner Bartzler, Andy Smith. Your team want to come forward?
I'm going to go first.
Sure.
Okay. Chairman Hess, members of the committee, my name is Bill Bartline. I'm a Tillamook County Commissioner and a certified public accountant. I want to start out by saying thank you for allowing me to testify. In Tillamook County, we're like most of the state, we have a real housing shortage in our community. Our tourism tax dollars have increased 60% in the last 4 years. That means that our county has been discovered by people from outside the county. We have over 7,000 second homes and short-term vacation rentals in Tillamook County out of our $18,000 of stock, and that's in more of these are going to second home and vacation rentals every day. Vacation rentals and second homes comprise about 40% of our entire housing stock. So we've been hindered a lot by this growth. This has driven the price of real estate up in our community. So our local citizens, really family wage job earners, can no longer afford a house in Tillamook County. It has just gotten out of control. In rural communities, we do not have the finances available to us to be able to make a difference in this. When the state has the grants, the great grants that are out there, we're not at the table because we don't have the staffing or the finances to put together grant applications over to oversee them. What this bill will do will give us some of that money to move forward with our own capital moving forward. Now, the 30% is a may. It's not a shall. In other words, the counties may do this, but they may not. They may leave it all as advertising and promotion. I know our colleagues from the South Coast, probably with all of the fires they've had, would leave it all for advertising. We heard testimony 2 weeks ago from the Salem Committee on advertising and promotion, their agency, what a great job they've been doing. Well, they would not be cut if their committee or their council said no, they would not be cut in that. So they would still be getting it. What it does is it allows us a little piece of the pie if we need it to kickstart our housing program. I went back when I drafted this bill to 2003 and read the committee reports and did some background checks. Prior to 2003, we were allowed to use that money for anything the counties or cities deemed necessary. So when you look at the city of Manzanita, for instance, probably one of the premier gems on the Oregon coast and maybe the whole West Coast, that has been funded with tourism dollars for their infrastructure and their construction. It wasn't built with advertising dollars. It was built with inventory and by building up their foundation for the city, so to speak. 2003, when the legislation changed, it was to build a tourism industry in Oregon. Our industry was not functioning as well as it should be. This money was set aside to make it function, to give it a bootstrap start. It has been successful in the 14 years. Our tourism industry is thriving right now. We have hit the maturity spot for tourism. Now it's time to reallocate some of those tax dollars back to the communities for housing. We'd like to make housing a tourism-related facility, basically, because it is part of the tourist industry's responsibility to take care of their own. One other point that I'd like to make before I wind down is that we're in a new day and age from where we were when this tax was enacted. Back in 2003, the bulk of the tax was on motels and hotels. Now we have short-term vacation rentals. I just have gotten the new transient lodging tax summary from Tillamook County. And last year in 2018, we only collected 18% of the tax on motels. 65% of the tax was on short-term vacation rentals. And I would argue that short-term vacation rentals really aren't part of the tourism community. These are houses owned by folks outside of Tillamook County. 90% are owned by outside interests. That 90% then goes outside of the county. When people stay in a short-term vacation rental, they bring their own food and groceries, they bring their own beer, they bring everything else that they need. So it's really not helping our restaurants or anyone else in there. The short-term rentals are a cause of the problem. Originally, when I drafted the bill, I was going to have it just be on the short-term rental aspect of the collections, just the short-term rental tax. But I wasn't, let's just say I wasn't capable of figuring out how to draft that. So I took the simple way and said 30%, which would equal about 45% of the short-term rental collections that we have in the county. So I'm just begging for our housing. We're hurting in Tillamook County, and this gives us a source of money. It's time for that 70% to be looked at again. After 15 years, it's not a sacred 70%. It's a percentage that was set arbitrarily by the legislature, and now you have the opportunity to look and redo that. And I believe in the original bill, you were going to relook at that in a future date. Well, this is the future date, and I'm asking that you really consider this bill. Thank you, Chair Haas and the committee.
Commissioner Bartlett, thank you. I can hear the sincerity and plea in your voice, and you're county commissioner, and you're trying to figure out the biggest problem you have probably in your county, and I really appreciate your sincerity. And
thank you.
Good heart.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, Vice Chair Benson, members of the committee. My name is Andy Smith, here today on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties. So I want to make three main points. They're highlighted in the letter. But to set the stage for those points, just to reiterate kind of some of the themes you may have heard around housing in Oregon, how significant of a situation we're in. This truly is a once-in-a-lifetime housing crisis in the sense that 53% of all Oregon renter households were cost burden. And what that means is that these individuals are paying more than 30% of their income on housing. That translates into 13,200 people, or that's a similar impact, are homeless across the state. So there are three overarching reasons why AOC is here today, why I'm here today to support Commissioner Bertlein. First off, when this the TLT was first or was last amended, I believe in 2003, it was a very different time in terms of the interplay between the housing market and the tourism industry. Today, we have a statewide housing deficit of 155,000 units across the state. In the coastal communities, for example, Commissioner Bertlein's county, I believe they're actually going backwards in terms of housing capacity. In other words, they are creating less housing than they're taking off the market through short-term vacation rentals. They actually have less supply than they had a few years ago. So that's point number one. The conditions on the ground are different. Point number two, in terms of the specific workforce issue in Commissioner Bertlein's county, the workforce specifically around the tourism industry is directly impacted by this situation. And it's unique. The situation is significant in the sense that there is an opportunity for that community to think about the other side of the equation in terms of workforce housing. So the third point, and maybe the most important point that I would make today, is that the bill does not change the TLT on the ground, or does not exist what exists in statute. What it does allow is for a community, elected local officials, whether that be a city or a county, to take a vote to say, hey, we want to change the current split, which is 70-30. And of that 70, a community could decide that they would want to change that 70%. Up to 30% could be used for housing. So I think Commissioner Beierlein got ahead of himself when he's saying, you know, this bill would change. He has to go back respectfully and get another vote with his commissioners under the bill. He does not, if this bill passes, it does not change that formula. He needs to go back, engage his local community, his tourism partners, and convince them in a public forum that a shifting of these percentages is makes sense for that community. So that would happen under the bill, would only happen in cities and counties if those conversations and votes took place. So I'd be happy to answer any other questions, but thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any questions for these two?
Questions?
Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how much money are we talking about, 30% Tillamook?
Chair Haas, Senator Benz, in Tillamook County, our gross transient lodging tax is about $4 million, or was last year. So we'd be talking, if we went the whole 30%, about $1.2 million. When we had our housing study done a couple of years ago, it was estimated that we would need $10 million over 10 years to get back to even in housing in Tillamook County. So that's the amount of money that it would take to get us back to where we belong, according to the people in the housing study. So 30%, $1.2 million for Tillamook County. And again, I'm just one vote of the three commissioners. It would take a vote, one more vote, plus we would be working with the tourism industry in Tillamook County to come up with an equitable amount.
This is not a new conversation, and for some reason I cannot remember, some folks from the South Coast came in several years ago, and there was a local approach that they could have used. They were exploring any number of approaches to raise money for housing. What other approaches are available to you that you're choosing not to pursue that you could?
Well,
the one that's coming to mind that I vaguely recall was a sales tax, a local sales tax, but I'm not sure I have that right.
Okay, and we have not explored a local sales tax. I'm not sure that's an option for us. We did explore the construction excise tax, the 1% fee. The county commission voted to approve it. The Realtors Association in Tillamook got upset about it. They went to the State Realtors Association and got $20,000, did an initiative petition, put it on the ballot, and we had one of the nastiest campaigns you could ever believe, and it went down to defeat. Tillamook County has the reputation now of being the only community in the state of Oregon where that kind of transaction happened on the construction excise tax. So that's a new tax. The nice thing about the transient lodging tax, it's an old tax. All we're doing is changing the formula for how it's distributed. We're not adding a new tax to anything. So, and that's a big portion of what happened in Tillamook. It's a new tax, and the sky is going to fall. It was only 1%. And nobody else has had that problem. I've talked to other commissioners, and they've all said, we didn't even have anybody show up to the hearings. So we have explored that option. I have explored just about everything under the sun. I've looked at what Portland's done with their $4 a night fee for staying in the community. We're actually starting to explore that. I don't know that that'll stand up in court. It hasn't been challenged yet, so we'll see.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benz.
And if you did have the $1.2 million, how much of a dent does that make in affordable housing challenges?
That should make a huge dent, because at that point we could afford to, number one, buy a chunk of land, and we've got some land identified that we would like to buy. We could then work in partnership with some of the affordable housing complexes across the state to actually build some housing in Tillamook County. Northwest Housing Alternatives really wants to come to Tillamook, but we've got to have a spot for them to build before they're going to come to Tillamook. It is really difficult without any funding at all to get off the ground. By doing this, we could put ourselves in a really good position within the 10 years to be in solid shape. Again, I don't know that we would use the full 1.2. We would budget out to what we actually need to make a difference in the county and go from there.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm just looking for an example and then to apply it across the rest of the counties. You made mention that 40% of the homes are second homes in the county. What, if you had your druthers or your thoughts right now, how many new additional units would you need to break even, just say to break even in the county in terms of providing affordable housing to the rest of the citizens?
I would say, I believe we're right at about 300 units, new units. We are losing about 130 units a year into short-term vacation rentals, and we're not building that many as we're going forward. So we need to kickstart, but what we really need is some affordable housing in Tillamook, because those are the folks that are hurting the most. And that's what where my heart lies, is to get those folks some housing. In our high school, we've got an estimate of 200 kids that have no permanent residence. And the superintendent said that could rise all the way up to 500. He's not sure. We have calls to the county that I'm living in my car. Where can I stay? You know, I'm not a housing person. I'm not a developer. I can't tell you what we need. But I do know we need to have the ability to bring in the developers to work with us to make things happen in our community. We don't have that right now because we can't afford it. We've been really lucky on our first housing study. Tillamook County Creamery Association has been a very valuable partner, and they've put a ton of money into helping us get started. But we need that permanent source so that we can actually start moving forward and making a dent in the housing crisis in Tillamook County.
Senator Brokers.
Andy, same question. What about the other 35 counties? Obviously, some counties, I can pick some over in Senator Spence's district that certainly have a housing problem, but they don't have 40% rentals because there's nobody over there. How much in the other 35 counties? What's the situation out in those? Is there a half a dozen problematic counties that are tourist destinations or?
Chair Hass, Senator Boquist, thank you for the question. I'm not sure how well I can answer that question, Senator. Would start off by saying that each and every county has a housing challenge. The data presents that. It shows up in our public safety system, mentally ill individuals showing up in the state hospital because they're kind of an indicator population. We've seen that in every county. But the interplay between tourism, this specific kind of nexus of these issues, you know, I'd have to take a guess at the number of counties. Certainly it's our coastal communities are affected. The Gorge is impacted. I would guess Southern Oregon, but that's some general areas that those issues would interfold or interplay. So that's a sampling. I can't give you definitive data very quickly, but we could try to help you at, you know, beyond the hearing here, Senator.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Bill Perry, Dutry Patel, and Ken Henson. You're out there. Some of you have submitted letters to the committee, which we have on public display on our OLA system. Don't feel the need to read those letters word for word. Just summarize what your feelings are, Mr. Perry.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. And I want to express the sympathy I have for local governments. Obviously, you guys are on the Revenue Committee. You know Ballot Measure 5 and Ballot Measure 50 dealt them some pretty harsh blows that created a lot of problems for them, and we're very sympathetic. I think the few examples that they brought up seems to be that they go after industry-specific type taxes and all the ones that they had brought up to the fights that they've had in the past, which is the frustrating thing to our industry, is these are all issues that apply to all industries, and so they need to be more broad-based to be addressed. We like to think that industry-specific taxes should be tied to the things that are directly tied to them. Gas taxes go to roads, lodging taxes go to tourism promotion. And so 2003, that bill was created because, and it still exists today, the biggest benefactor for local lodging taxes is still general fund purposes. Over 40% of local lodging tax go to general fund purposes. Now, it's going to be different in every community. I understand that. The second biggest benefactor for local lodging taxes is tourism-related facilities, which is important because I think the discussion always revolves around promotion. Very little of this money goes to promotion. Less than 20% on a statewide basis goes to promotion. So the only thing we're talking about in this bill is removing money for promotion. A lot of these tourism-related facilities are bonded, so you can't, even if you take it out of tourism, you can't take money out of the bonding. You've still got to pay off those bonds. Now, when we get to the tourism promotion part, the other thing is they always talk about peak seasons and tourism. You can talk about Bend or Ashland or the coast. Usually they're talking about what happens during the summer months. These local DMOs don't advertise in the summer months. And so if you look at what has happened in Tillamook County, in 2014, they created their local lodging tax. Back then, they were doing about $4.9 million in this time of year, this down season. Now, when you look at, they did about $21 million in the summer. And so what happens to those businesses, I don't care if you're a restaurant, the creamery, the gas station, you're laying off workers. Okay, if you lay off workers, they can't afford housing. The best thing we can do for those workers is try to spread out that revenue. And so when you look at just the last 4 years that it's been in, this down season in January, they've gone from $4.9 million in receipts to $10.7 million in receipts. So that means my restaurants are hiring more people. The housekeepers at the motels are doing, hiring, keeping more hours. They're paying more gas taxes because people are going over there. That's what this bill is about, is how do we basically make sure that we can keep people employed year-round. Tillamook County, I think, is a great example. In 2014, we came in front of this very committee with then Commissioner Labhart, and he said, we can't afford roads. Tourists use roads. We need to use lodging taxes to pay for roads. So Senator Betsy Johnson at the time and us, we sat down and we developed the lodging tax in Tillamook County, and 30% of it goes to roads, okay? Now here we are, you've had the transportation package, roads are solved, so now we got all of a sudden got to use lodging tax for housing, okay? So they take 30% for housing, then all of a sudden it's going to be public safety. They keep going back to these industry-specific sales taxes, and it's a frustration our members have, is every time we try to work with a local government, they forget about it 2 years later and try and take more. We're trying to figure out a way to keep businesses in business and try to spread out those revenues. And the short-term rentals is a problem. I will say we don't see a difference from a short-term to a hotel from a situation where if we travel with our family, most of you know that, I've got a 12-year-old and a 20-year-old. You can't stay in a hotel because they go to bed at different times and everything else. So a short-term rental works for them. In hotels, if you're traveling, it may work for you. They're all part of the industry. But the collections on short-term rentals is down because obviously we dealt with this as a committee. Also, the counties are in charge of inspecting lodging properties. They're not inspecting short-term rentals. So when you look at from a business standpoint, I'm easier to go to a short-term rental because I don't have to pay for the inspections and I don't have to pay the lodging tax half the time. So you're creating this disadvantage that is more beneficial to short-term rentals. So I think there's a lot of things that we can do. Housing is an issue, but it matters, like he said, for the creamery. It matters for anybody in the retail business. But we need to look at a broad-based solution because I don't believe that this is going to create a solution. It puts a Band-Aid on until they go after the next industry. But, we're trying to figure out a way to bring tourists outside of the Portland and metro area in the off-season, and this is the best vehicle we have, and it's proven to be successful. So we would appreciate that if you leave it the way it is and try to get people to come back for housing, I don't know, roads or anything else, to get more broad-based solutions that include everybody that's going to be impacted. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Hass, Vice Chair Bentz, members of the committee. I'm Ken Henson. I'm an employer on the Oregon coast. I would agree with everything that Mr. Perry said, and I would add that during these shoulder seasons, non-peak seasons, we reduce our hourly staff hours, our labor dollars spent, by about 60%. And that's with with tourism being up, I believe, 94% since the tourism promotion was enacted some years ago. I believe that the key to affordable housing is a multi-tiered approach. One is to make housing affordable, to make sure that we can pay labor, that we can afford to keep people hired year-round without reducing their hours, without reducing their benefits. And I think my personal belief is that there's just too much ambiguity about how those transient lodging taxes are spent, what they're to be spent for. So,
what business are you in?
Pelican Brewing Company, Kiwanda Hospitality.
Thank you.
Senator Haas, committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Trudy Patel. I'm in the hospitality industry in Eugene, Oregon, Lane County. I agree with everything to the right of me or left of me has said. I do just want to add that the language in the bill is very vague for where that 30% gets spent, which is concerning to me because we don't really see the return on investment there. With tourism, the tax dollars that get spent, every $1 creates, every person that comes, about $237 in visitor spending and about $11 in lodging tax, which, like they said before, we really need in the off season because we lay off our housekeepers hours to from full-time to roughly 14 to 20 hours a week because we just don't have customers coming in to provide full-time employment. And in order to afford affordable housing, you have to have employees that work full-time to stay in them. That would be all for me.
Questions, Senator Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in knowing the evidence that indicates the type of return on that tourism dollar investment, because I really am taken with the argument that it doesn't do any good to have one level of housing if you can't afford to pay what is now necessary to pay for rent. So how are you at in the spaces that you're in able to gauge the return on the investment of the tourism dollar?
Do you want me to do it? Yeah.
I'm sorry. What
Chair Haas.
I'm sorry. Tourism. I meant tourism tax dollar.
Yeah. Chair Haas, Senator Benz. Well, remember, I can get you the statistic. There is a study that they've done that we've done in the field. Now, remember that is based on promotional dollars because that once again gets into the frustration is a lot of these local governments will spend it on parks or in Manzanita's case, I think they built a public restroom as a tourism facility. But the stuff that goes to promotional dollars, we actually have a study that shows the return on the promotional dollars, and I guess and I will give it to you and the committee so I can get up for you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I know this is neither posing or for it, but there's a certain irony I see with especially places on the coast where this housing is an acute problem more so than the rest of the state because of the secondary short-term rentals. But in a discussion earlier today about Bandon Dunes having the problem of not being able to pay their groundskeepers enough where they can afford a house down there, and this Salishan can't pay enough to attract good cooks, and it goes all the way through the coast, and yet there's still, I just find an irony in that, and again, not to put you in a difficult spot, but I'm sure you run into that too with your staff. It's hard to attract people if they can't afford to live there.
I would agree with everything you said, and I think the way out of that is additional revenue. You know, if we can afford to pay people from increased revenues widely generated by the transient lodging tax, tourism promotion monies, we have hours for people. We have revenue to pay people.
Can I add to that? I also agree because I come from a family-owned business. We started with one hotel, and the reason that we were able to expand from 5 employees, we now employ over 100 employees. That was purely due to more events and more tourism coming in, creating more profits so that we can expand our businesses and create more full-time employment for people in our community.
Do I get to say something?
Thank you.
Well, you just mentioned restaurants, which obviously the restaurants aren't being taxed. You know, I would say the gas stations and everybody else in Bandon Dunes, their employees are facing the same problem. So the question is, why is it the hotels should be paying this when everybody in the retail sector is under the same problem is you can't pay people enough to live there. In Sun River, I mean, you can go down the resort communities and they are, but everybody in that business community shares the same burden. And so that's what we're saying is something should be shared amongst all those business sectors.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. We're gonna keep going down the list here and I will call up Ken Hansen, Alan Pike, and Tina Battelle. Same rules, if you have a letter in our system, don't feel the need to read it. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Scott Youngblood. I'm the general manager of the Embassy Suites Hotel at Washington Square. In 2016, I was Governor Brown's first appointment to the Oregon Tourism Commission. I'm grateful for the honor, and I take immense pride in our statutory mission on the Tourism Commission to enhance the quality of life and encourage economic growth in Oregon through our strengthened impact of tourism across the state. Back when our legislature passed the Oregon Tourism Investment Proposal in 2003, Oregon was ranked 47th out of 50 states in tourism-related marketing. Since passing that landmark legislation, visitor spending in Oregon has surpassed national averages and increased 82% from $6.5 billion to the most recent $11.3 billion from $6.5 billion to an $11.5 billion. More importantly, the resulting state and local tax revenues have increased more than 100% from $246 million to more than a half billion dollars. These statistics point to a success story, the result of visionary state legislation, which has been successful in precisely the manner it was intended. Today, Oregon's tourism promotion is among the most cost-efficient and highly respected in the nation, and that is thanks in large part to the work that you did in 2003. You already understand our state's rural economies benefit disproportionately from tourism. Along with wood products and agriculture, tourism is one of the three largest export-oriented industries in Oregon. Of course, by export-oriented, I simply mean that out-of-market income is flowing into our state and into our rural economies, being spent on the goods and services, restaurants, wineries, retail shops, guides, outfitters, and of course, hotels like the one that I manage in Washington County. And while manufacturing and traded services are declining, travel industry employment and earnings growth has become the leading sector in many of our state's smaller communities. Oregon's 112,000 hospitality employees have benefited from your support and protection, both from unfair practices and the unintended consequences of well-meaning legislation. With Senate Bill 595, we're at a legislative crossroads. It's true that untaxed and underregulated private vacation rentals are harming access to affordable housing. However, Airbnb is at the opposite end of the spectrum from legitimately licensed and safely operated hotels, especially in terms of their impact on rural economies. The lodging tax we collect for tourism promotion is spent in pursuit of off-season and shoulder season visitors, as you've already heard several times, to Tillamook, to Ashland, Oak Ridge, Baker City, Cascade Locks, McMinnville. I could go on, but you know the towns as well or better. The tourism businesses creating jobs and driving the economy in these communities are also in need of affordable workforce housing. However, reducing the income of our working class constituents won't make their housing more affordable. 595 strives to advance the cause of affordable housing across our state, which is noble. However, this isn't taking from the rich to give to the poor. Rather, this bill will directly harm our working class Oregonians far more than it could help them. Respectfully, I ask you to consider the myriad other proposals and programs currently being discussed to improve access to affordable housing and take the brave and principled stance in opposition to 595. I really appreciate your time, and thank you for letting me be here today.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chairman Haas, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my views on this bill. My name is Alan Pike, and I am general manager of the Hampton Inn & Suites in Roseburg, Oregon, one of the rural communities that Scott mentioned. I'm also chairman of the board for the Roseburg Area Chamber of Commerce and a board member of Travel Southern Oregon. I've worked in the hospitality industry in various capacities since 2000 and have been in Roseburg since 2013. I came to Roseburg in February of 2013 to manage a hotel on behalf of Insight Hotel Management Group. They had signed an agreement to manage a 35-year-old independent hotel named the Windmill Inn, with the assumption that eventually the owners would build a new hotel and we would go on to manage that property. That did all come to pass, and the new Hampton Inn & Suites is the property that I currently manage. The two properties offer an interesting illustration as it relates to this bill. At the Windmill, we would be busy during the summer and very slow during the winter. During my first 2 years, we would cut our staff to about half during the off season and staff back up during the spring. We would really never be fully staffed, and it was a constant battle to have good, trained people on our team. We saw some increases in business during the shoulder seasons as the years went on, but we were still significantly slower outside of those summer months. At the Hampton, we are busy year-round and have been able to sustain the same level of staffing for a full year. At the new hotel, our staff are better able to plan their lives and pay their bills, and we have fewer associates leaving for better pay or more hours as compared to at the Windmill Inn. Our team is also happier, and I have far less staff coming asking for advances or other assistance to make ends meet. I say this not only to highlight how happy I am to be working at a brand new hotel, but to also point out that there are differences a more consistent amount of guests staying at our hotels can make for our staff. We are talking about affordable housing, and I can tell you right here and now that our staff at the Hampton Inn are better able to afford their housing now than they were when we were over at the Windmill Inn. Oregon is an amazing state that has so much to offer our guests, not just during the summer, but year-round. We should be promoting that fact to as many people as we can, as often as we can, in order to bring people here. The tax that we collect is on out-of-town guests visiting our hotels. It makes sense that those funds should primarily be going to bringing in more out-of-town guests, because we know that they will contribute to our economy in a myriad of other ways. Wineries, gas stations, restaurants, local businesses. When you have someone in for multiple nights, that impact becomes even greater. If this bill were to become law, the impact of tourism could be devastating. The businesses that suffer the most would be ours, but also taking a significant hit would be all those other businesses that benefit from tourists visiting the area. My hotel doesn't have a large marketing budget. I have the Hampton Inn & Suites name. It's part of the Hilton family of hotels, and those are both things that work in our favor. If someone looks for a hotel in Roseburg, there's a good chance they'll book with us because of that name recognition. But that's the catch. Somebody has to be looking for a hotel in Roseburg, Oregon. They need to be looking to stay in Roseburg. If we were to pass this bill, what we would see is a decrease in that, because this mechanism that we have in place now, it works, and it's effective, especially in my experience in Roseburg. I fully acknowledge that there's a problem with affordable housing in our state. It's an issue that we should all be working together to address, and I'm certainly in favor of looking at other options. As this is an issue that affects all industries and employers, it doesn't seem right that our industry is singled out to pay for this on behalf of everyone. There are other steps and actions that can be taken to increase housing supply, which is ultimately what it'll take to make housing more affordable. The city of Roseburg, for example, recently passed two ordinances in order to make multifamily housing units easier to develop. I imagine other cities have come up with their own creative solutions, and those are routes that we should all explore. It's my sincere hope that this bill does not become law. I appreciate the time that you've allowed me to speak on this, and thank you.
Thank you. Chair Haas and committee members, my name is Komal Tina Patel. I am from Eugene, Oregon. I own and operate four hotels in Eugene, and I've been into the lodging industry for the last 30 years. I have seen all ups and downs on the lodging industry, what lodging tax has risen and how the state's tax has gone up. But having the 70% on a tourism tax, it's really helped us. In last 10 years, I have seen it that our employees has been stayed same during the summer month to the winter month, because the advertise that's happening, people are coming to our town, and they're not only staying one night because they're passing from California to Oregon. they're staying 2 to 3 nights to looking at the beautiful Oregon. So, and before, I remember 30 years ago in winter, we had to let people go in winter time. We, you know, we had to get that hours down and we couldn't afford to give them hours. For last 10 years, my employees are with me for 10 years and they're all full-time, and giving them a full-time employment, they're able to afford affordable housing, and it's making our industry stronger, and they're staying with us, you know. And I don't think so it's fair that our industry is the one to take a hit for the affordable housing. I think we need affordable housing. It is an issue in our Oregon. I think we need to look at the other situation, other industry, not only the hotel industry and the lodging taxes. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you for that. Are there any questions of this panel? Thank you. Appreciate you coming down here today.
Thank you.
Jeff Miller,
Alana Hewson, Angie Onowuji.
Apologize for that last name, mispronunciation.
Did great, actually.
Yeah?
Really well.
Start.
Oh, do you want me to start? Okay. Chair Haas, honorable members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. All of us, in fact, that are here to talk in opposition to Senate Bill 595. My name is Angie Onowuji. I'm the president and CEO of Travel Salem. And we are a destination marketing organization. We market and promote Marion and Polk counties, which includes 27 cities. Our destination is largely rural, and I cannot impress upon you enough how important tourism is to rural economies. And I think you probably already know that. Job creation is critical, and tourism is sort of unique in terms of providing jobs at a variety of different levels. You have full-time family wage jobs, but you also have seasonal employment, temporary part-time employment that's really important for our students and our seniors. So a really healthy economy is driven by tourism jobs. And I've also said that tourism is the front door to economic development. And tourism pushes dollars into every corner of our economy. And for many of our businesses, tourism dollars are the best dollars that those businesses receive. Tourism success comes from stable funding. Tourism marketing is very expensive. Marketing is all about reach and frequency. How many people can you reach with your message? How many times can you reach them? It's very expensive, and to do it right requires a lot of capacity. And this type of activity, the success that the industry is having doesn't just happen. We have to make it happen as those tourism professionals. We take a lot of accountability for the success and health of our local communities and quality of life. We are the storytellers of our communities, and we are working to get visitors to choose Oregon, to say yes to Oregon. Here in Salem, I'm competing with destinations all across the world. I'm competing with New York City, Rome, Cape Town, and I could go on and on. Salem, Oregon. I'm trying to get my message to the same consumer. It's expensive. And if Oregon wants to remain competitive, we have to protect our tourism promotion funding so we can continue to tell our story and stand out in a very, very competitive landscape. I want to thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer any questions at your convenience.
Chair Haas, committee members, I'm Jeff Miller, the president and CEO of Travel Portland, the destination marketing and management organization for Portland. Our job is not only to attract visitors to Portland, but to push them throughout the state. In Portland alone, $5.3 billion was spent last year by visitors, and its tourism supported over 36,000 jobs, which is a 36% increase over 2010. You know, when we think about tourism, it's a big business for Portland, but for the rest of the state as well. And on Friday, I received a call from Senator Betsy Johnson introducing me to a colleague of hers, Rick Williams, who's with the Marine Technology Society and wants to bring Oceans 23, a conference to Portland and Oregon, over 1,000 people, which is approximately $2 million in economic impact. It would not only bring attention to Portland and Oregon, but to the marine work being done in our state. Our sales team will be able to do that winning bid because we're funded by a transient lodging tax, and you can imagine the entire coast will benefit from that. The analysis of how much lodging tax is actually realized in the 36 Oregon counties shows that the 595 doesn't create that much funding. Those same amount of funds, however, do, when leveraged against Travel Oregon and other DMOs, do create real economic impact through their promotion. And Portland is only as good as what we are surrounded by. We also have the Visitors Facilities Intergovernmental Agreement in Portland, which is an agreement between the city, the county metro, the lodging and rental car industries. Those 2.5% of those taxes from each industry goes to fund visitor facilities. We have agreed through negotiations over the last 2 years that some of that money should be used for homeless services, and that money, most of it, the VRT, the vehicle rental tax, would go to Multnomah County to do that through the Joint Office of Homelessness. But for these funds, our aging facilities in Portland, Memorial Coliseum, the Expo Center, have no funding other than general fund to maintain them. So this 595 would open a door to redirection of those critical infrastructure funds while not fixing the affordable housing in any community. I would also like to recognize both Portland and the City of Portland and Metro for the $911 million in bonds that they have passed to create affordable housing in our community. And we at Travel Portland were very supportive of that, and they did not use transient lodging tax to do it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Andy Vibora. I am employed as the Vice President of Stakeholder Relations at Travel Lane County in Eugene, Destination Marketing Organization for Lane County. Travel Lane County's board of 30 businesses and local government leaders from across the county representing more than 640 member businesses and organization has voted to oppose Senate Bill 595. We share concerns about affordable housing in Oregon, and we commend the legislators for looking at solutions, but we feel that 595 is a mistake for several of the reasons that you've already heard about today, and I'll just quickly touch on. Affordable housing is a systemic issue, and this bill places a significant tax burden on a single industry, the hotel industry. Vacation home rentals are direct competitors to hotels. Several of our board members remind us of this every board meeting, and they're very frustrated with the growth in this particular area and the effects that it's having on their business. They feel it's an unlevel playing field. And so to divert taxes on hotels to solve a problem caused by direct competitors to hotels is poor policy and unfair in our opinion. The legislator did make a commitment to the hotel industry in 2003 when the hotel tax was passed. And as a voluntary tax on the hotel industry, the tax relieved general fund responsibility. In our area last year, $12.2 million was raised in transient room taxes. The biggest benefactor of that was county government, $4.5 million of that, followed by the city of Eugene, then the city of Springfield. So they rely on those funds to fund important projects from their general fund. So it's important that these funds be used for tourism promotion. And so Senate Bill 595 violates that commitment made by the legislature in spite of the strong economic success that's been talked about since 2003. One of the premises of Senate Bill 595 is that affordable housing is needed for hospitality workers and that creates a nexus for using hotel taxes. Our observation is that hospitality workers rarely qualify for affordable housing. Hotels are being asked to fund housing for their workers that often won't have an opportunity to utilize that housing because they do earn too much. I think there's a number of studies that are available that show that, you know, hospitality industry is all these entry-level jobs that people can't afford housing and different things. In fact, that's not true, that fully over half of the jobs in the hospitality industry are career jobs. So we support the effort to address Oregon's housing shortage, but we urge the legislature to seek systemic solutions for the systemic challenges such as housing. Thank you again for the opportunity to present testimony on behalf of Lane County.
Good
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, Vice Chair Benz. My name is Alana Hewson. I'm the managing contractor of the Oregon Destination Marketing Organizations, and I do have a letter on record with you, so I'll summarize. I am here to represent more than 60 destination marketing organizations from across Oregon, most of them in rural communities, and my partners here today have talked from their specific destination marketing organizations. But I do want to reiterate that the role of a destination marketing organization is to level the playing field and grow business on a year-round basis. And the revenues that are generated annually will help employ a workforce, train a workforce, and grow Oregon's economy year-round. Destination marketing organizations are the local conduit to their regional partners and their statewide partners. We're leveraging the lodging tax that's generated in order to grow Oregon's economy overall. I do want to make one point before we close, and that is we have been able to learn a very valuable lesson in our industry. When you look at what happens to shutting off the pipeline to marketing and promotion in the visitor industry, Colorado is an outstanding example of that situation. In 1993, Colorado was the first state to entirely eliminate its tourism promotion budget. In less than 3 years, they went from $12 million to a budget of zero. And as a result, their domestic market share plunged 30% with a revenue loss of more than $1.4 billion in tourism. Realizing their mistake, they very quickly put together their state tourism agency, and it took them a number of years to try to grow back the business that they had lost. I live in Central Oregon, and there has been a lot of talk about the vacation rental market and its impact on housing. So certainly we have seen that impact in Bend, and the local legislators took leadership in that to indicate that they were going to work with the county and the Tri-County region in Central Oregon. But the city of Bend passed an ordinance that would limit the number of vacation rental units that would be available in proximity to one another in the community to try to sustain that growth of vacation rentals in a market where they were growing at a prolific rate. So much of this responsibility for housing, the tourism industry wants to be a partner. We are a part of this state, a part of this economy, but there are resources beyond lodging tax that should be investigated as a solution for a very critical issue. My family has four generations of people working in the hospitality industry in Oregon, and I'm very grateful that this has given me the opportunity to be with you today, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Coming down to Capitol today.
Allison McIntosh and Justin Black.
Chair Haas, Vice Chair Benz, members of the committee, my name is Allison McIntosh. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Housing Alliance to express our support for Senate Bill 595, which will allow local communities to dedicate resources for affordable housing. The Housing Alliance is a coalition of about 90 organizations that believe everyone needs a safe, stable, affordable place to call home. My testimony is in OLIS. I wanted to take a second to answer your question, Senator Boquist, from earlier. In Tillamook County, according to data provided by Oregon Housing and Community Services, we need about 700 units to meet the need for people earning very low and extremely low incomes. Statewide, that number is 148,000 homes for people earning very low and extremely low incomes. And I'm happy to send that data to the committee after this. So as you have heard, we, and have not just today, but throughout the session, we simply don't have enough affordable homes for people who need them. And vacancy rates have dropped in communities across Oregon. People are struggling with homelessness, housing instability, and housing inaffordability. As Commissioner Bartline pointed out, there are very real impacts of tourism and short-term vacation rentals on our housing supply. Over the years, particularly in coastal and tourism communities, new housing has been built to serve as second homes or vacation homes, and rentals that were previously available to local workers are no longer available. There are two articles that are included, one in my testimony and one that I submitted to OLIS, one about the Tillamook Creamery. They have shared very publicly about their struggles to find workers who can afford to live in their community and work at their facility. And then also there was an Oregonian story about a restaurant that will be sold because they are unable to find employees who can live in the community. I think with that, I will close and happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, I'm Justin Black. I'm the Government Relations Director for Multnomah County. On OLS, you should find testimony from Chair Kafouri in support of Senate Bill 595, so I won't spend a whole lot of time. I would just say that this is a statewide issue. Many of the issues that Tillamook has, Multnomah County has as well. I would say in addition, Multnomah County has a problem with chronic homelessness. Our commissioners have heard repeatedly from individuals in the tourism industry that this is a big problem. And that it is affecting tourism, that it is hard to get groups to come back to Portland after they've seen some of the chronic homelessness that has happened in Portland. I would say that Senate Bill 595 gives us just another tool in our tool shed. We are looking at any number of ways to either raise revenue or redistribute revenue to help get people off the street and into stable housing. I would say that this just gives us the option. We look forward to working, if this bill passes, with our tourism industry to find out that right mix of what the funding looks like and also what the programs are that this money would go towards that would best support the work that they're already doing. And I'll stop there.
Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to support.
And for everybody else out there, what I'm interested in is that if we're short 148,000 units and how that breaks down by city, county makes a difference. And of course, we consistently hear that there's a problem, but the challenge that we don't hear is, okay, what are other the compounding factors to this? I mean, we rarely talk about the fact that cities and counties, you know, system development charges and everything else make even Portland to build affordable housing almost unaffordable to build affordable housing. And then the next question comes back is, as the good commissioner from Tillamook County pointed out, 40% of the houses in his county are second homes. Somebody owns the second home someplace. And that second home is either being not used as housing, which could be used for housing, even affordable housing for locals that are working in the cheese factory. Likewise, many of those are being used as part-time rentals that are outside of the whole economic scheme. And I guess they're probably missing that on their Schedule A of their tax form because they're not honestly reporting that they're getting that revenue either. And so in order to address the situation, we need a much more comprehensive approach. We can do a apartment complex in Tillamook. We can throw $300 million, $400 million, $500 million out here, but you guys know the math as well as I do. I mean, you do the math into the division. We're not going to get to 148,000 units anytime quick. The question is how do we use what we have existing, and how do we then make it affordable? The transit tax that was implemented in the House Bill 2017 had everything to do with affordable housing, is trying to reach out into smaller communities to get that. But even if we pass this or don't pass this, it's not going to put a dent in 148,000, not even going to come close. And you're absolutely correct. I mean, people aren't coming back to Portland, and we're losing the tourism battle. In fact, because of the present situation, and it's not just Portland, it's in Salem, it's in Dallas, in my communities, and every place else. But I would just challenge folks to, you know, there's a lot more data that needs to be come up with a good plan that will actually work. I mean, even passing this is not going to be much of a solution to anything. It's sort of good faith, but good faith doesn't fix the economy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you both. Jody Weiser, Marcia Kelly.
Senator Hass and members of the committee, when tourists show up in Oregon and at the airport and they rent a car, they pay some tax. And when they stop for a drink, they pay some alcohol tax. And when they buy gas, they pay some tax. And if they rent lodging, they pay tax. And that's it. when we go to other states, we pay sales tax on all those things in addition to the excise taxes. And so, in truth, it's an industry with a lot of low-paid workers. A lot of low-paid workers. In the back of every restaurant and the maids in every hotel are people who are struggling, were struggling in 2003, probably, to afford housing. But we made a decision to say that we'll tax the tourists, not the industry, but the tourists, when they stay in lodging. And we put most of that money into tourism, a promotion or tourism, later tourism facilities. Well, it's 15 years later, and while the industry will say their promotion has created all the growth in tourism in the state, probably Portlandia and a lot of the movies have also produced a lot of the tourism in the state, and the large number of college-educated students that are, have, you know, they finish their degree and move to Portland because Portland's been promoted in other ways, and the and once Portland's promoted, then the rest of Oregon gets promoted. We don't have very many ways that we collect anything from tourists. This is one of the possibilities. I went looking to see what brochures look like, and found that in Salem, you can see four different brochures for Central Oregon. That's a lot of paper to encourage people to go to one section of the state. Probably every other section of the state has similar resources made available. You can order them by mail or you can pick them up at a tourism place. That seems pretty elaborate, given the kinds of needs we face. And I'm pretty sure that promotion industry will survive a cut. According to testimony we've heard today, it's grown by 94% since 2003, which means the promotion budget is up by 94%. There has to be a limit to how much they need. And certainly we need whatever resources we can get from tourists to help with the needs of our community. Thank you.
Chair Hass and members of the committee, Marcia Kelly, the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition, and we also were in support of the bill. According to the Travel Oregon website, where they have resources, and they have a study done by Dean Runyon and Associates, in 2017, there was $11.8 billion of direct travel spending in Oregon. And I would suggest that there are a lot of things on that website that are on, in that report that would be, would inform your decisions. My family was originally in Eastern Oregon, so I took a look at some of the areas that my grandparents moved to Bend from. Milton Freewater got $18,000 in tourism taxes in 2017. And just up the road in Pendleton, it was over $1 million. Baker County has $578,000. And Union had $168,000. So it's not something that isn't happening as far as the lodging tax in a lot of places and even surprising places. There are 112,200 employees in the tourism industry, according to the same report. And as Ms. Weiser said, a lot of them are very low wage workers. So if there is some ability to get some money out of the lodging taxes, it does seem like an idea that would work, and it's a permissive, it's not a directive. I would say, having been in the travel industry in my prior career, that part of the reason that Oregon tourism has grown is they have matured in the way that they advertise for people to come to Oregon. And they no longer just advertised through the American Automobile Association and the rubber tires coming into the road. They do advertise in other way in other places, and that was one of the things that had always made me annoyed when I'd see other states advertising in my professional journals about sending people there. And so I'm glad to see that they're doing some of that promotion. But at the same time, we also need to realize that not everything has to be in one of those beautiful brochures with paper, because a lot of people nowadays use the internet. And that actually does make cuts in sort of the promotional costs, because the printing and the paper are expensive. So I think that we could use some of the money, if the cities or counties wanted to help maybe jumpstart the matching money for some sorts of grants, and it could work. I do think there's enough money for everyone to share in.
Thank you both. We have no one else here signed up to testify on this bill, so I'm going to close out the public hearing on Senate Bill 595. Thanks, everyone, for the discussion. I would encourage the hoteliers and the restaurant officials and the tourism people to do what I heard some of you say a couple of times here, and that is to step up and partner more with housing advocates and Commissioner Bartline and others. So thank you all. We're going to recess for about 2 minutes, and I'll be right back here if you need a break.
Okay.
It's cities that are entirely surrounded by translator district where cable television corporations operate or have ceased to operate, and it authorizes the translator district to annex such cities. Gives the city's discretionary authority to approve the self-annexation of the translator district, and that must be put to a vote following the board passage by the translator district, and authorizes fee-paying district members to serve on the board regardless of elector status, and also it exempts property owned by the state of Oregon from the district service charge. And then there's a dash three that states that the translator district may not submit this annexation question to electors until after December 31st, 2020.
Okay, thank you. And Senator Benz, could you give us your comments on this and the problem we're trying to fix here?
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing the bill. Members of the committee, you may recall that I carried a companion bill on this translator district, right, which I believe is the only translator district remaining in the state of Oregon, across the floor of the Senate several weeks ago. This bill, that particular bill, was designed to allow the translator district to have its own radio station, and then television station, and then to do several other interesting things in that space. This translator district applies to basically, or participates in, just two counties, Union County and Baker County. The district is extremely important to people who have no other source connect with LeGrand and Baker City, and the hope is that the folks there will be able to have their own local television station. This particular bill addresses a problem that has to do with the difficulty in having people within incorporated cities pay for this type of service. Currently, letters are sent out to people, and they have an opportunity to reply and say, no, we don't want to pay. And if they don't reply, then they receive a bill. This would add cities to that particular circumstance. I hope I'm getting this technical part right. I think I am. But each city would have to vote on whether or not it wants to participate in that type of approach to paying for this type of service. This is an arrangement that is supported by the county commissioners, by the mayors, and all of the folks that you generally ask about this kind of thing in both Union and Baker County, and I would hope the committee could support it.
Thank you. And to Senator Riley and I, this is our second swing at this bill. It started in the business committee and was referred here, amended there. So is Alex on the phone?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Alex, can he hear us?
No, not yet. Hold on, let me check.
Okay.
It's too bad, Mr. Chair. He'll correct me wherever I was wrong, or I was hoping he would.
Yep. You're looking forward to it. Hello? Mr. McDad? Catadad?
Let me try one more time.
Our other committees, we have one of those funny phones in front of it. I don't see any speaker in there.
We have to move that up here.
I got it on here.
Mr. McHadad?
Hello.
Alex? Volume.
Yes. Sorry, was there a problem there?
Hey, Mr. McHadad?
Hello.
Hello there. Welcome to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. You're on the record here. We just introduced the bill. We got five members of the committee here present. Two of us, Senator Riley and I, heard this bill, and I think heard from you in the business committee, which passed it, amended it, and referred it to this committee. So we've just summarized it. Senator Benz did an able job of describing the problem that this bill seeks to address. And so now we'd like to hear from you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Chair Haas, Vice Chair Benz, and members of the committee for hearing me. Again, my name is Alex McHadad, Executive Director of Blue Mountain Translator District, serving Baker and Union Counties. And it's a pleasure to discuss SB 393, which attempts to improve the operations of Oregon's last TV translator district. Now, a TV translator, for the members of the committee who aren't familiar with us, is a secondary transmission service that relays broadcast signals from one geographic area to another, in this case, from Portland and Boise to Northeast Oregon. Now, unlike full power and Class A low-power television stations, translators are not required to broadcast for free. The Federal Copyright Act of 1976 says that government TV translators may charge, quote, assessments necessary to defray the actual and reasonable costs of maintaining and operating the secondary transmission service, unquote. When the legislature created TV translator districts in 1975, property taxes were used as the assessment method, but the legislature transitioned translator districts to a system of service charges in 1979. Now, the way we implement this is that every year we mail a service charge liability notice to people who live in our district, which was drawn to incorporate properties in the area that are in range of our signals. If you use our signal, you pay a fee. If you don't use it, you request an exemption. And if you don't reply, the charge is placed on your property taxes the following year. This was originally intended to ensure that property owners returned their notices, but has gradually evolved into a preferred method of payment for many property owners. And I want to add that the system was upheld in Wilhelm versus Blue Mountain Translator District in 2004. Now, one of the problems with the way we were set up in the 1970s is that cable companies did not want to see direct competition with translator districts. So cities were carved out of our district boundaries because they had access to cable. As a result, we have come to surround but not include 10 cities in our district boundaries. We can only send somebody there a letter if I go to their property and find an antenna. With one employee in 10 cities, we never have the resources to do that. So last fall, I did volunteer to go and inspect cities on my weekend, and I found over 320 unregistered antennas. Changes in technology have made TV antennas difficult to identify. Over the last 40 years, they've evolved from 5-foot metal structures mounted to rooftops to 5-inch cords connected to smartphones. Given these changes in tech, we need to be able to send service charge liability notices to the owners of all properties in range of our signals, not just those rural locations that did not have access to cable in 1978. We want to add additional portions of this bill. One says that service fee payers who live in the cities can serve on our board of directors because we're making decisions that can affect somebody's property tax. We believe people in these cities should be able to be participants in our governing process. We also, in this bill, are going to exempt state properties from paying our service charge. Right now, there are a couple properties owned by ODFW that the for which ODFW makes payments in lieu of tax. ODFW rarely returns our service charge liability notices, so every year we end up increasing ODFW's payments by a couple hundred dollars. There's a third property in Haines that is also similarly liable. And if we pass this bill exempting state properties, that'll save ODFW $400 over the next biennium and possibly prevent a third property from becoming liable if Haines joins the district. Now, the Dash 3 amendment submitted today has a new provision barring us from holding city annexation elections until 2021. If this bill is passed by the legislature, we want to give city councils time to request the introduction of new rules and statutory changes to prevent erroneous property tax liens prior to holding annexation elections in their communities. That's what the bill says, and we hope you will join us in supporting it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Data? We thank you for joining us. For where are you? In the Blue Mountains.
My office is in the Grand.
Okay. Well, we thank you for your testimony, and we have no questions for you, so we'll take it from here.
All right. Thank you very much, Senators.
Okay. If we have no other testimony on this or no comments, we'll close out the public hearing on Senate Bill 393, and we'll get a work session scheduled for that legislation as soon as we can. Okay, thanks, guys. We're adjourned.